Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. As you know, I love to perform different types of ultrasound exams, but one that I'll admit can sometimes be rather challenging is the biliary exam. So when I'm looking at the gallbladder, that's pretty easy. I can usually find the gallbladder, no big deal. Where it becomes challenging is trying to identify the common bile duct, because sometimes it's not where you think it should be, and sometimes it can take a long time. Sometimes you really just can't find it for whatever reason, which led me to wonder, as I've been teaching this over time, is how important is the common bile duct in visualizing it? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I don't want to dive just into that because I know quite a few of our listeners are not really experienced in point-of-care ultrasound, specifically in the gallbladder exam and the related structures. So we're going to break this down just a little bit to get to that point. Now, obviously, going to a good ultrasound course is going to make a huge difference with this, but we'll talk about that more at the end. For right now, what I do want to talk about is the biliary exam, and then specifically how the common bile duct can play a role. It is worth remembering that biliary pathology is the third most common cause of abdominal pain that is seen in the emergency department, and evidence has demonstrated that no combination of clinical signs and laboratory testing are sufficient in the diagnosis, and imaging is necessary. So, a systematic review back from 2011 demonstrated that POCUS being performed in the ED was effective in detecting choledocholithiasis and cholecystitis. It has also been shown to help reduce the length of stay. There are five main things we are trying to identify with biliary POCUS. We're looking for gallstones, gallbladder wall thickening, pericholecystic fluid, common bile duct distension, and a sonographic Murphy sign. Those are the five key parts of the exam and what we're looking for. Like I said, the common bile duct can be very difficult in some cases to see. And yes, we're looking for the portal triad to get there, which is going to consist of the portal vein, common bile duct, and hepatic artery. On ultrasound, this will look like a Mickey Mouse sign adjacent to the gallbladder. And if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, please go to the website, totalem.org. Under emergency professionals, look at podcast 177. It will be the most recent one if you're listening to this recently, after it's been released. But make sure to check out some of the accompanying images as well as links and further details. It's worth checking this out so you can have a better understanding. Once you identify that Mickey Mouse sign, you're going to want to know which one's the common bile duct. This, in some ways, can be intuitive, but the real way to make sure is simply put color flow on it. Once you get color Doppler on board, you can help identify the portal vein, the common bile duct, and the hepatic artery and differentiate between all three. How do you know which one's the common bile duct? Simple. There's lack of blood flow there. So what about the measurement? What does that mean? Well, for patients less than 60 years in age, an internal diameter of greater than 6 millimeters is pathologic. We have some newer evidence for every decade of life after 60, we add another millimeter to this cutoff. So for example, an 80-year-old will have a cutoff of 8 millimeters. It's worth remembering that post-cholecystectomy patients will have a normal common bile duct that can measure up to a centimeter or 10 millimeters in diameter. If you are still trying to figure out how to do this exam, that's okay. It's hard to show things in an audio podcast. So I do have linked to 5 Minutes Sono, which does a great job summarizing in just a few minutes how to perform this exam. However, this leads us to the next point of our conversation, which is specifically the common bile duct. How important is it to be able to visualize on exam? There was a 2017 paper in the American Journal of Emergency Medicine that discusses this specific issue. And a lot of the details, a lot of the nitty-gritty type stuff was covered in another great podcast, Ultrasound Gel Podcast, which I highly recommend. They go and kind of take a deep dive into the specific paper. We're not going to go through all the intricacies because I want to hit just the main points of what you need to know so that way you can start applying this on your next shift or at least think about, is this so important? Is this something we always have to visualize, or can we think about the other parts of the evidence and what we see instead? It's worth noting that the study was performed at a single academic institution in a prospective observational style. Patients had still laboratory studies as well as biliary pocus, and the gold standard was the diagnosis from the ED or hospital discharge. Now, they could have further testing such as ERCP or surgical pathology, but the patients were contacted 2 weeks after their visit as well as monthly for a year if they were not successfully reached. Only at that point was the patient excluded from the study, which I think was rather impressive just because of the persistence. So basically, they contacted these people at least a dozen times if they were unable to get a hold of them the first time. And I think that's something that's at least worth trying. Like I said, there's some little extra details to consider in there. But for our purposes, just know that they really did try to get good follow-up information to make sure that things were what we thought they were. Another big benefit with the study was that it was performed by a variety of physicians, not just attendings, but also residents and fellows, which I like. Again, as we talked about with previous studies, I'd love to see how PAs or other people are in the mix of this, but this study did include at least a variety of level of physician. And all of them completed at least an hour of didactic training, as well as 3 hours of hands-on scanning, which is good to have a good solid basis. What they were looking for was all the usual stuff we're talking about. So they're looking for a common bile duct dilation, as described above, as well as a wall thickness greater than 3 millimeters, that's gallbladder wall thickening, pericholecystic fluid, and a positive sonographic Murphy sign. An abnormal common bile duct was visualized 12.7% of the time, and the common bile duct was not identified 4.4% of the time. Nearly 80% of patients had some form of abnormal labs, and nearly 75% had an abnormal POCUS exam. Gallstones were identified in a little less than half of all cases, and a dilated common bile duct was identified just under a quarter of the time. So this is something that, when I was reading through this, I found very interesting, and the Ultrasound Gel podcast people picked up on the same thing. The fact that gallstones were only seen in about half of cases, to me, is kind of a big red flag that, you know, we can't just use the lack of gallstones as a sign of this is probably not cholecystitis or other significant biliary pathology. And I think that's something we have to kind of keep in our minds is we're not just looking for gallstones plus everything else. It's any portion of this should be a red flag for what we're looking for. That gallbladder wall thickening, the pericholecystic fluid, the gallstones that we were talking about, as well as the common bile duct diameter and a positive sonographic Murphy sign. There were only 2 cases of complicated biliary pathology without laboratory or POCUS abnormality. They did not have common bile duct dilation in either case. Only 2 patients with common bile duct dilation, so about 10% of the overall cases of common bile duct dilation, did not have at least 1 lab abnormality or abnormal POCUS finding outside of gallstones. In both cases, looking over the paper, it appears that they had uncomplicated cholecystitis, which for me, I think is an important point because yes, they did have common bile duct dilation and yes, there were no other abnormalities, but their cholecystitis did not require any special intervention, which may indicate that these are probably patients that are not as big of a deal if they were missed, given you probably would have done something else with these patients. But I think it's at least worth keeping in the back of our mind that these are probably the less risky of patients. And only 1 patient without a visualized common bile duct did have a complicated biliary pathology. Here's the interesting part. It was actually pancreatitis, though, and they had an elevated lipase. So again, the abnormal lab shows up, and again, it was only 1 time that a common bile duct was not visualized where there was something more urgent going on. And almost 10% of the time when a dilated common bile duct was found, the patient had uncomplicated cholelithiasis or a non-biliary diagnosis. So that means it's not perfect in itself either. This leads to a sensitivity of 23.7% and a specificity of 90.3%. That also means that we have a positive likelihood ratio of 2.43 and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.85, which really doesn't mean much. To me, when I see this, that means that, hey, it might lend some credit when you see it or when you don't, but it's not enough to be diagnostic in of itself, which makes sense with the rest of the evidence and what we're talking about in this paper. Given there were limitations to this, just like any paper. The big limitations were that these findings were not compared to a standard or expert overview. The patients did not all receive a definitive study of some type. There were no cases of cholangitis or malignancy, which can also have some complicated findings. And these patients had an overall lower BMI that we may see in most patients. The average BMI was only 28. However, I find this overall is a good study in that while the common bile duct is beneficial to find whenever possible, it does not appear to attribute to diagnosing complicated biliary pathology, at least in this study. However, I did find in this paper that some other interesting stuff I noticed was the gallbladder wall thickening was the most common finding, and that gallstones were only seen in about half of cases, which I think has really changed my idea and my overall picture of looking at these. Because before, I was looking at those two main things, gallbladder wall thickening and gallstones, and kind of anything else I noticed along the way is beneficial. But now I'm going to really see this as a better overall picture thanks to this paper and realize that the common bile duct, we should still be trying to visualize it, but we shouldn't fret if that's the only thing we're missing, especially when the rest of the labs and imaging is otherwise unremarkable. Now, I told you that if you were interested in learning more, especially if you wanted to learn how to perform such exams, that you should attend a really good ultrasound course. And as you may remember, Practical Pocus is a sponsor that has helped us so much along the way. Practical Pocus has a couple of different courses that are coming up in 2020, both live in person as well as live online for those who are unable to travel but still want to get education. And you can check out more details there at practicalpocus.com. But something that is coming along the way, and we're going to talk about a lot more here in the future as some details get a little more concrete, but just so you know that it's coming, is a new asynchronous course, which means that you'll be able to attend online at your own time. And there'll be certain amounts of live follow-up afterwards for people who are interested in that. But this allows someone to go ahead and learn at their own pace, at their own time, without having to be pressured to go to a specific place or have to travel to try and learn live. So it obviously is going to be for certain types of people. This will be designed more for the novice learner overall, but especially with some of the deals with Butterfly, this is something that can be very beneficial as you can combine it with your CME funds. If you have some money that's sitting around in your CME funds at the end of this year and you're wanting to use it before January 1st, 2020, because we know that that's coming and we know we'll lose our CME funds, at least in most places, that's where it changes over at, go to practicalpocus.com and register for their live online course. If you have the funds for it, or if you want to put a little extra in, you can take this one step further and you can actually be able to not only register for the course, but be able to buy a Butterfly IQ with it. Go to the site to learn a lot more details on it. But if this is something that you're interested in, I highly suggest it. It's a great way to use your CME money. And if you say, well, hey, I can't get my CME funds, I've used them all up for this year, but I want to do this next year, fear not. Again, Practical Pocus will have those options for you, plus some more that's coming down the line. Again, we'll talk about this more over the coming weeks, but in the meantime, check out practicalpocus.com to learn a little bit more about it. Otherwise, I hope that this makes you more comfortable with biliary ultrasound, but until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.